We are recording on the lands of the Wurundjeri Woiwurrung people and we acknowledge them as traditional owners. We'd also like to pay our respects to their elders past, present and emerging. Always was, always will be Aboriginal land.
Midnight to midnight. Welcome. Screening. Welcome to midnight screening. Welcome to screening. Welcome to midnight screening. I am screaming. I am screaming.
I am screaming.
Welcome to Midnight Screening, where we let you stay up past your bedtime with the movies you probably shouldn't be watching. But Eliza, Anthony, don't stay up too late because you have to
run into somebody coming down the chimney.
That's right. We love to stay up late with our movies, but sometimes you've got to make sure you're in bed at a good time. You don't want to get caught out by a jolly old fella.
You better not pout. You know, better not cry.
Better not cry. Better not disobey.
Yeah.
Better be in your place.
Better like our podcast, leave a positive Apple Podcast review, follow us on Letterboxd.
Give us money for extra content.
I'm telling you why.
Because Santa Claus is coming to town.
Wow.
He's arrived at the end of the jolly good year that we've had.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like a version. Time has definitely happened. Yeah. There's no
time. You know how Santa goes ho, ho, ho? That's his trademark sound that he says. Yeah. Do you think it's like just a thing that many people used to say in ye olden days, like as a laugh instead of ha ha ha, it would get written out ho ho ho.
But isn't the Santa thing that like the whole tradition of Santa actually isn't even that old?
It's from there's the thing that people are like, oh, it was created in the Coca-Cola ad in the 40s or
is that
whatever.
True?
Yeah, I wonder where ho ho ho, where that originates.
I hear it as two other things.
Yeah.
Like one, it being a contraction of like hooray.
Oh,
but the other one being like land ho, you know, like when you're on a ship and it's like a kind of I've arrived declamatory statement.
Shall we all try?
I think it's just like a laugh. Like he's just a jolly. He's like, oh, ho, ho.
Maybe we all go into this festive period and try to integrate it into our life and see how we do.
We'll try to just subtly make your laugh sound more like ho, ho, ho and see if people pick up
and
on
never
it.
Comment on it. Exactly. It's like ho, ho, ho.
I guess I was... What I was
like that
say,
laugh you just did. What if that was naturally you'd been like ho, ho, ho. Yeah.
I'm going to try that quite a bit.
I'm going to try it for this season. We'll see how we go.
Okay.
Which means you also have to be funny enough that I laugh. Ho, ho, ho. Nah.
Oh my God.
Didn't come.
That...
Didn't come.
That sounded very contrived.
Yeah. It was. Yeah, we've had quite a year. Look, as we're nearing the end of the year, I know we're going to be very reflective anyway, so there'll be more times we can talk about what a year it's been. But essentially, we are leading up to the final run of episodes for the year. In a few weeks, we are going to take a short break because I think we've earned it. We've had an episode every week since we started, which is what we wanted to do.
We've been busy little elves working away in the shop and I need a little smoko. I need to
we need to vape our back. Yeah. We need to go unionize.
Elves, a little candy cane vape. Like, I swear to God, I'm quitting tomorrow. I can't fucking take this anymore.
Well, the boss is just riding us so hard, man.
Like he's riding that sleigh.
Yeah, that's right. Wow. Exactly. He never comes down from his ivory. What would the equivalent of an ivory tower be in the North Pole? It was probably a candy cane tower as well. Gingerbread house.
Yeah, he's the tower of his, the turret of his gingerbread house.
The tower of his gingerbread house. Wow.
What a terrible place to work. I feel like never been said that Santa lives in a gingerbread house. We're just like making shit up on the fly.
Yeah.
Just adding to the lore.
We're working with what we got. The lore is well tread, isn't it? So yeah, essentially it's a festive time. We wanted to do one more midnight marathon series for you. So in the coming weeks, we've got some random Christmas eps talking about more cursed media, which has become one of my favorite surprise trademarks of the show. I have to thank you, Eliza.
Taken over.
I really love it. Meg, our sister, messaged and was like, when we did the Liquid Dreams episode, I forgot to tell you this, and was like, is this just what your podcast is about now?
She looked away for like 5 seconds yeah. and then looked back and we're just like a cursed media YouTube channel.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
God.
I'm proud of it. I think it plays really well.
Yeah.
We've got that. We've got actually in these last 5 episodes of the year, we have 2 really, really exciting interviewee sort of episodes where we're going to talk to the really incredible people, but also talk about some movies.
Oh, yeah, can't wait.
So, yeah, going to take the year out with a bang. But this Midnight Marathon is season screamings.
Ah!
We're talking about Christmas horror films.
Which
Christmas horror. I know. Yeah. I was going to say, initially, what are your thoughts on the Christmas horror subgenre? Because I have many of them.
Yeah.
But you kick it off. When you get to that December period, are you pulled to watch some Christmas horror?
I definitely am.
Christmasica.
There has to be something called Christmasica.
Well,
Christmasica.
The main thought I have is you go, I want to watch some. I actually think in general people go, oh, in Christmas, watching Christmas movies. I'm like, you can count on 2 hands the Christmas movies. Like there aren't that many.
The canonical big ones.
I'm not talking Hallmark Christmas. Like obviously there are things with Christmas in the title and stuff, blah, blah, blah. But like actual Christmas films, like, we all know what they are. There aren't that many. Christmas horror-wise, I think it's such a ripe space.
Yeah.
And there aren't many at all.
I think it's like if I was, like, a crazy romance fan where I'm like, I will never run out of these to watch.
Yes.
I don't think we would ever get through all the Christmas horror movies there are. And they all are some kind of pun, like Christmasica. There's Santa's Sleigh, S-L-A-Y.
But
there's
do you think for the season it is, there should be more really classic ones?
There should be more good ones.
Yeah, totally.
Like I would say every year we discover one where we're like, wow, that was really cool. Good,
it's true.
Good new Christmas horror movie.
I feel like every year we go, let's watch some Christmas horror.
Yeah.
And then I'm like, I feel like I've watched all the ones you need to watch. But yeah, as you just said, we do stumble on great ones all the time.
What are the ones that you would say are in your canon that maybe we're not going to get to with this marathon?
Because
we don't want to rewatch Gremlins, which I freaking love so much.
Of course, great movie.
Black Christmas, we've already covered before.
The old timer. I like all three. I'm less hot on the
2000s one.
Actually, the opposite. I'm less hot on the like 2018,
2019. Middle one in the early
2000s. Yeah, I was going to say like a few years ago, we were really repping the like Blumhouse remake one from 2018 or 19 or something.
But now I've soured on it a bit.
And right. I would say that the 06 one is really, really worth your watch.
Wow,
it's just like aesthetically all the tropes of that era of horror at their max and so much fun to watch. Like it looks so grimy and dirty. Its worst quality is that...
Oh, I have seen it. I just don't remember it. That's so crazy.
Its worst quality is that for a remake of Black Christmas, it's like the most like... not violently misogynistic, but just like has no interest in that element of the story, which is why.
Made by the X-Files Final Destination boys.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, there you go.
Interesting.
It's just like a very simple version of the story, but it looks great. I would say ones that we're not talking about in this Midnight Marathon season that I like to recommend, again, they're not like all-timer classics. I just enjoy popping them on.
Yeah.
I quite like P2.
Yeah, that's P2, cool.
It's like sort of like cat and mouse game thing of this woman who has to like work late in her like corporate office on Christmas Eve. And essentially she's trapped in the car park of her building.
It's one of those like single location, contained, claustrophobic kind of things.
Yeah. And I remember like I always think it plays really well and it has randomly great gore in certain moments. And
I can do without Krampus. That's whatever. Rare Exports is kind of cool.
Yeah, I haven't seen Rare Exports. Krampus, if it was, I kind of feel like a bit of a hypocrite because we said on our In and Out list that I was very pro family horror.
Yeah.
But Krampus is just so PG. You know what I mean? Like it just doesn't play because I think it needs hardcore horror.
Yeah.
I kind of get wanting to do a Gremlins-esque, like it's one for the kids, you know? But yeah, what about that movie Dead End we watched last year? Do you remember Dead End?
I literally don't remember anything about Dead End. What happens in
that
one?
It was like a Twilight Zone episode about a family not trapped in a car. They're like driving to Christmas dinner and they just keep on driving.
Yeah.
And they're like, when is the road going to end? And it's like a Twilight Zone episode.
I kind of do. And it would be like the kids would get out and they'd be like, Timmy, go look for gas. Yeah. And they'd be like walking along the side of the road. It's like terrible what happened to them. And I really don't remember
it's
at all.
It's the most a film has ever been designed to be watched while you like make a Christmas pie or something. Yeah. Anyway, what about you? Do you have any other than Gremlins, Black Christmas, any others come to mind?
No, I'm sort of doing like a
Jack Frost.
Cursory little scroll. I mean,
is that Christmas?
The Michael Keaton. There's two Jack Frosts, obviously, that we could do for Twin Peaks. I only remember the Michael Keaton family one, which is kind of a horror movie. And you know, I heard something really interesting about it recently. So, you know, it's about like every Christmas movie, it's about a dad who's like a workaholic or whatever, and he's trying to get home to his family for Christmas. But shocker, he dies. He's Michael Keaton and he comes back as a snowman and he's there to throw the old pigskin around with his son one more time. And then at the end, he's like, I got to leave, but I'll always be with you in your heart or whatever. And he melts. And a bully kid says, hey, snow dad is better than no dad, which is really good. But the snowman looks really eerie and strange and does not look like Michael Keaton at all. And part of it is because they designed the snowman already when George Clooney was cast as the dad. So the snowman kind of looks like George Clooney as a snowman a little bit.
And then did he just drop out?
I guess. And they're like, well, we already built the fucking snowman. Oh, well.
Who did you say the snowman? Oh, Michael Keaton.
Michael Keaton.
Yeah. I guess
it kind
Michael
of doesn't
Keaton
look like anyone. It just looks uncanny.
Would be cheaper
but it looks
than
more like
George
Clooney.
Clooney
than Michael Keaton.
It really does.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, good for George. Wait, what year did that movie come out?
When did the Jack Frosts come out?
Because maybe
it
was those 3 years that George Clooney disappeared from the world because he injured his spine.
Oh, God. I don't remember that.
Oh,
I don't know. Only the
story.
Spooky Jack Frost is coming
poor,
out.
Poor George Clooney. Well,
poor buddy.
One day.
1998.
Yeah, maybe it did. I feel like it happened in the early 2000s.
Interesting.
Imagine being like, finally, I get to play Jack Frost, but now I can't because of this
like,
stupid
we
injury.
Built the snowman. He's like, I've broken my spine. I can't be Jack Frost.
He's like, I would move mountains to repair this spine for you. But no, anyway. Yeah, maybe one day we'll look. I assume at one point I'll be on my deathbed and you'll still be showing me shitty movies. But today we actually are talking about a shitty movie today. But for our Christmas horror season, we picked largely things that we haven't seen before that we wanted to try.
Mm.
But today's two films, we have both seen either both of them or one of them. I'm going to call up top that this is the biggest disparity in quality between anything we've done on the show so far.
Ever,
I think.
What about Brat, the album, and Brat's the movie?
No, you've made a good case for what I just said. Because the Brat's movie still had like those songs that we like and stuff, you know.
And you could tell they were going for like their different mediums. So
yeah.
Billy Madison and Billy Elliot on the old podcast.
Billy Madison.
Billy Madison
is like, it's misguided. Well, it is what it is. You know what I mean? That film, like it does what it's trying to do.
Whereas these are two movies about someone dressing as Santa and hacking people up and taking the whole, he sees you when you're sleeping, he knows when you're awake, naughty and nice list thing to like a nuclear degree and murdering people.
And some like, sort of linking with the
traumatic Christmas day when you're a kid and it makes you a crazy psychopath as
an
adult.
And just like pure, you know, the idea of like naughty or nice, are you a good person or bad person? A very like binary view of ethics as a child being combined with witnessing sexual trauma and the way that that filters into their view.
They're both
about brothers. They both feature like witnessing Santa in some way as a sexual being very young and that's scarring you for life. And they are very, very different in quality.
Yeah.
What two films are we talking about today?
We're talking about Christmas Evil and Silent Night, Deadly Night.
Oh, no.
Part two.
Part two.
Not the first one.
But technically kind of the first one for reasons we will explain.
We'll get into it and you'll see why we didn't need to watch Silent Night, Deadly Night, the original
the first one. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a red hot time. So we're going to talk about just this season and how well, I actually think it's a really good episode to start with because Christmas Evil in particular, one of the only films that isn't just set at Christmas one of the only Christmas horror films that isn't only set at Christmas, but is very much about Christmas. Like the time.
What do you mean? They're all about Christmas time as well.
No, they're not. A lot of them are just like the setting is that it's Christmas. You know what I mean? It's all about like what is Santa? What is this thing that we do, this tradition? You know, I find it very interesting. That's why we're going to talk about it right now. Ho, 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 ho. Sorry. Christmas Evil is a 1980 American slasher Christmas horror film. This is a classic case, Liz, of what we love to note on the show when a film has multiple other titles. I want to tell you some of the other titles for this film, and you tell me if they're if you think they're better or worse. Because I kind of
Christmas Evil.
It's not a great title.
No, it's I like it. I was going to say I like it.
How I don't feel like it captures.
No.
It doesn't make this film sound like...
The word evil isn't in your mind much throughout the movie.
No, and it doesn't really capture that it's like it should be an essential watch for people, you know? This is really one of those things when you first watch it, and like, how do people not talk about this like all the time? Mm. Anyway, this title in particular I think is much better. So the film is called Christmas Evil. It was originally titled You Better Watch Out.
Yeah.
So much better.
Very good.
Suits it way more. Mm. Is more about the themes of the thing. Anyway, and also known as... Terror in Toyland.
Nah.
Worse.
Yeah.
Not as good.
That sounds like it's a, you know, Chucky or Annabelle or something, like the toys are evil.
Yeah, exactly. Mm. Exactly. And it's like
yeah,
so
you
much
better
more
watch
character
out
study.
Is better.
You Better Watch Out is better.
But Christmas Evil, it's like this movie, it came arrived so early at the holiday slasher kind of thing that I like that it could just claim such a basic title, Christmas Evil. Like Christmas Eve, Christmas Evil.
Yeah. Yeah, very true.
That's good.
Well, so much to talk about with this film. Absolutely love it. It follows a deranged man who is played by the incredible Brandon Maggart, who Eliza has an incredible fun fact
Guess
about.
What? He is the father of Fiona Apple.
What?
Wow.
How crazy is that?
And he's so good.
Her actual surname is Maggart. It's like Maggart McAfee or something
Fiona
like that.
Maggart. That's awesome. Yeah. So there's that, which
it's
I learned.
So wild.
Another fun bonus. He is a deranged man who, when he was a little boy, he witnessed Santa having sex with his mom. Essentially,
I saw mommy getting groped by Santa Claus.
Yes. Yeah. He was watching the through the stairs and he was like, what the hell? My mom's having sex with Santa.
Hmm.
It has, you know, it means that he's obsessed. He's a grown man who works in a toy factory who, you know, instead of being like, I work a shitty factory job, is like...
Takes it so seriously.
We should make the best toys ever because toys are so important. He's obsessed with Santa. His whole life is about Christmas. He's like emotionally, essentially, just like emotionally stunted in childhood.
Mm.
And this particular Christmas, the very stark, are you naughty or nice, like element of being Santa becomes very present in his life and he goes... on a like murderous rampage of essentially fulfilling the like adult promise of Santa through to its final fruition. He's going to be Santa this Christmas, dealing out justice as judge, jury, and executioner. Mm. And I think when you watch it, it isn't surprising at all that it's a huge influence on John Waters, who always praises it, says it's one of his favorite films.
He has a commentary for it. We should have watched with the John Waters
oh my God.
Commentary. I would love
I'd
to hear
love,
what he had to say.
Yeah, me too. Liz, my favorite thing this time watching it that I want to get your thoughts on is that I kind of mentioned it briefly in the opening, but like, would you agree that like usually Christmas is used as like table... what's it called? Table setting, like a set dressing instead
of...
It's
just decorative, whereas you don't think the themes of these movies are often about Christmas.
I think I love that this film is really about like, you know, what are the sort of things that John Waters plays with a lot, for example, of like, you know, very traditional, largely restrictive family roles, and the idea that like whiteness and just the culture of like middle upper classness is in its own way deranged. Yeah. And that Christmas is sort of this weird time where like, you know, the whole thing of Santa to a degree is like just training children to be obedient and all those elements
of
Christmas.
And then it's all for the kids, and then the adults are sort of like stressed out of their minds and like hate their jobs and just want a break and just want to like booze and go to the office Christmas party or whatever.
I just think it does such a good job of being like, if that's the way that these sort of like artists, these filmmakers like to view society, and I view it that way as well, this sort of like pastiche idea of taking our traditions and putting it on like a really weird heightened pedestal. It's so true that Christmas is like so fucking weird. Like Santa and Christmas is, it makes you be like, yeah, it is so weird that we all lie to our kids. It is so interesting that like, if that thing sits on such a fine like razor's edge, and if it tipped the wrong way to the slightest degree, you would just scar a kid forever, you know?
Yeah. I mean, the next movie we're going to talk about is more explicitly explicit in its tying of like Santa to Christianity, where it's like the similar idea of like, it's a faith that gives you something to hope for and like a system to live by, and it makes all these promises to you, but if you're perceived as doing something naughty or bad, like it will come down on you and like traumatize you or whatever. But like that's still here of this guy seeing Santa, I guess, be like a dirty dog to his mom and not understanding that it's his dad. It's literally the Christmas Carol, I saw mommy kissing Santa Claus or whatever, and it ruins his fucking life. And he still has that sort of childlike devotion to the idea of Santa being like omnipotent, omniscient, like, and that's good, like that he's this Christmas dictator that can go around and make everyone's holiday in his image.
Totally. I was gonna say, I noted like, I just kind of like the idea of dealing with Santa as like the, like a myth created by the people, and if someone was to wield the myth for their own power, what it, like, you know, because of Trump's America, like I've been hearing people talk about that thing of like just what it is to be raised, being taught all these messages and ideals that the second you try to practice them in the world, you're like, literally, we teach preschoolers these things, and then you become an adult and it's like, why would you be kind? Why would you be generous? Why would you yada, yada, yada? And it's so interesting to see Santa as this like vessel for someone with a very regressed childlike brain perspective for what is morally good and bad, being like, everyone around me that's supposed to be good is doing bad things and vice versa. Like the idea of being like, oh, well, I love toys, so I'm going to work in a toy factory. And then the way it paints his job, the place is called like
Jolly Dreams.
And it's just like this ugly ass factory where they stand on the factory line and make really shitty toys. Yeah.
And he's sort of like naive enough that one of the catalysts for him losing it is a coworker is like, can you please take my shift tonight? Like, I want to spend Christmas with my wife and stuff. And then later, after doing this guy's shift for him, like just doing him solid or whatever, he sees that the guy has actually just gone to a bar and is like bragging about like, oh yeah, I duped that like dumbass guy from work into taking my shift or whatever. And like he can't conceive of that. Like I think even though he like loses his marbles and dresses up as Santa, like he's not a deceptive character. So the title Christmas Evil is funny because it's like evil sounds so calculated. But this guy, he starts doing his killings and his evil, I guess, in such a honest kind of way where you can see how it makes sense to him, and it's a really pure thing for him to uphold.
So he literally, he's made his own
He made Santa a great suit. Looking Santa suit.
Stunning suit.
He glues the beard onto his face and he's like overjoyed as he's tugging at it and it's not coming off.
The performance is so good.
It's amazing. The bit where, so after this bit, he's come home after seeing this guy at the bar or whatever. He's angrily come home and he's grasping one of the toys from Jolly Dreams and he's humming Santa Claus is Coming to Town to himself. And he hums like pretty much the whole song. But it's so captivating and he's like gripping the toy with like white knuckles and eventually it shatters. And it's just like...
It is patient.
Hearing him like kind of like self-soothe or have this tick of humming the song to himself. It's like, it's really like emotionally tense. It's so good.
It's such a good exercise in that though. Like it's supposed to be a funny film and also you really get him. Like it's really patient. Like there's also that really great bit with the beard that we were mentioning where like that is just tracking that actor from the moment that they start feeling that thing until they stop. Like he pastes it on. At first you're fluffing it and you're like, oh my gosh, it's real. Then you start tugging it and you're like, it's real. Oh it's God. Not coming off. And then he's just like so giddily happy that it's like he's like
he has
tearing.
Like tears are springing into his eyes and he's like yanking it. It's crazy.
And again, because you get to sit with it for so long, it gets to be both funny and also clearly like register as something where you're like, he's like, it's me. It's really me. I'm really him.
It's funny that it is such a great performance that really comes across because it's really only like his eyes for the whole movie because he's covered in this big fluffy suit and big beard. Like he still manages to be quite expressive through it. But for like the, you know, 2/3 of the movie, you're pretty much just watching this very plush looking great Santa costume running around town, like terrifying people. Slashing people, trying to fit down a chimney. He doesn't quite fit. And weirdly, I remembered, because we've seen this before, I remembered his suit getting way dirtier.
Like, yeah, me too.
I thought that was a real part of it that at the start. Like the way the movie's lit is like his beard is glowing white. Like it's almost like aquamarine blue with how white it is.
Yeah.
And then by the end, it's like all black and brown. By the end, I was like, he still looks like a pretty nice Santa. I don't know. He's sweaty. And he looks like he has blood on him.
He looks like he's Santa and he's been having a big night. He's been like going around the world.
He's got to deliver presents to all the good boys and girls.
Yeah, exactly. His sleigh is a van that he has painted a sleigh onto. And when he's driving the car,
he slaps the steering wheel, like whips it and he's like, on Dasher,
on Dasher, on Dasher. Like, it's so good. It's great. So, so good. Yeah, his performance is great. I just think it walks such an awesome line where like, it gets to be really silly and it also gets to be really sad. Like, I really, you know, kind of classic story of someone that has always been seen as like submissive or wimpy, being like, why can't people just do the right thing? This is what it is to be good. This is what it is to be a bad person. I'm going to deal out my own justice. Like that sort of traditional idea. But because it doesn't force its hand too much and does just feel like someone trying to retain childhood or just still being a child, existing inside of an adult's life.
Yeah.
And still believe. It's like that thing of like when we all stopped caring about Christmas at a certain age. And if you were just someone that's like, no, that thing has to be
that's
real.
All I have.
Because Christmas is magic. And then you're just like an adult man that like your whole life all year round is about Christmas.
Yeah.
It's really sad.
It's really heartbreaking when that fantasy gets like validated. Like when he gets dragged into his, the Jolly Dreams Christmas party, everyone's like, oh, look, Santa's here. And he's sort of at first like, oh no, like I can't go in or whatever. But everyone buys it and it's just like, oh, this is like, you know, some guy's dressed as Santa, how cute. And like, the kids love it. He does like a merry little Santa dance and like gets so much attention. People are giving him drinks and it's like this magical transformation from how he's normally been treated, like which is just going completely unnoticed. And then like he doesn't – there aren't many consequences from this, but as he's leaving, he's like, I have to go now. And children, remember, if you're good, I'll bring you a lovely present. And if you're bad – I will bring you something horrible.
Yeah, and he's like,
and the kid's like, oh.
It's so funny.
And he's like, oh, goodbye. Just leave.
It's so good.
And then later, there's another, there's like a like foil to that scene, I guess, where his killing spree has been noticed by like the townsfolk, by the adults. And so they've been told, beware of anyone dressed as Santa tonight. We get a sick moment of like Santa's in a lineup, like, 10 Santas or whatever at the police station, which is great. But he happens upon some kids in this funny little like rear window kind of apartment complex, and the kids rush up to him and he's like fully in character as Santa. And when the parents around the corner and see this dirtied Santa, who they correctly assume is the murderer that's been like causing carnage across town, they're like terrified and try and get the kids away. And the kids are on Santa's side.
It's like the Pied Piper.
They want to protect him. And it's like, it's kind of adorable.
It's so smart. Like as a scene, it's just such a good scene. Like it's so interesting to have the kids be like, no, get away.
The kids like, are like, daddy, no, don't hurt Santa. It's so good.
Yeah, literally. I don't know. Again, I think so many things about it, and it makes you feel so many ways because Christmas is such an interesting time and the nature of this guy's neuroses, the way they sit squarely in it makes me like, it makes you think about a bunch of stuff.
What do you think is his plan of what he's trying to do? Like, is he just going to try and be Santa forever, or is he like, oh, you know, Boxing Day, I'll take all this off? And
I think the idea is just to be Santa for Christmas. I don't think it has longevity to it, because I think it is like that idea of being like, I am Santa, I'm meant to be Santa. Mm. That's what my life is supposed to be.
Santa or die.
So at the end of the night, he can't really go back to it. I just don't think he's thought that far ahead yet.
Yeah. Can we talk about how, as usual, I haven't seen this movie. I'm reacting to the things that you've said only.
It's always helpful.
Can we talk about how, like, there's this idealization and, like, this imperative to take up the mantle of Santa and like be the kind of morally correct vessel in the world that has been set in action by seeing Santa have sex with his mom? Like, is this like an Oedipal vibe? Like, do you get to see any other interactions with him and his mom throughout
his
the film?
His brother comments on him as being like a freak. Does he say he's like sexless or something? Essentially just... the resounding idea is that he is
never grown up. He's stunted
and in a world where adults are cruel. Like, his own brother is like, I wanted an older brother who would look out for me. But instead I've had this freak my whole life.
Mm.
So I think it more so just leans into that idea of
that
finding...
that he's going to be a better Santa?
Yeah,
like, I think
it would be that.
Does he think he's going to get to... grope ladies as this Santa? I don't think that's in his mind at all. He's a very pure guy.
Yeah, I actually think it's a child's version of growing up.
Mm.
Like, in his mind, this is maturity, is being like, I will be the Santa that people need because no one can be him, instead of accepting that, like, life isn't black or white. It's very gray. People are all trying their best. Christmas is a you know, secret that we give to kids at a point in their life, and then other things happen to you.
But it's a really easy like adult archetype to like latch on to and be like, I can fulfill this role because I understand this role so clearly because it is so like kind of simple and reductive.
But it is actually a good point that's like, especially considering the next films we're going to talk about, it's the traumatic inciting incident, but not in a way that like sex is constantly pointed out through the rest of the film. More so what is just very present is that he's completely stunted. Like he just hasn't been able to grow up.
And it feels like there's an element there that's like not quite unpacked, or like that's there's like a loose thread or something with like
it
that inciting incident
questions.
And like what he thinks of himself as he then inhabits this role. Like, because of the idea of it, like, being traumatized. Like, is the idea that he was like, no, that Santa was, like, doing it wrong, so I'm, like, correcting the wrong by, like, being the Santa now.
And the question is never, that is a fake Santa in a fake costume. Like, every time he sees Santa in his life, like a child does, he's like, that is Santa. By which I mean... when it was his dad, when he was a kid, having sex with his mom dressed as Santa, he was like, that's Santa. When he's watching the parade on TV and they're like, here comes Santa, he's like, oh my God, Santa's here. Like, it's not him being like, there's a real Santa out there. It's not him being like, oh, these are all fake Santas. It's him every time. It's like a child is. Like when a kid see, when they're like, Santa's here, a child is like, oh my God, Santa's here.
Yeah, it's the Santa.
Which means there's like a subconscious agreement that whoever is wearing the Santa suit
has some of that magic.
Is sour. Is sour. Is Santa and has some of that magic. Yeah.
Special.
And therefore, I think it is a bit of a like, I can become him and do it better. And I very much think that the sexual element implied in that as well is some very weird Oedipal stuff around his mum.
I think it will come up in a lot of these movies about a crazy traumatized kid who sees something weird happening with Santa, like in the next movie as well. Because it's like the whole Santa thing is like the first lie that your parents tell you, I guess, or like the first lie that kids find out, I suppose. So it's like the first big betrayal or trauma if you've had an extremely happy and protected childhood.
Yeah. But also, like, I guess conversely, if you have a really traumatizing experience hypothetically surrounding like Santa or like Christmas in this time of year, it would be really challenging to like overcome that because you would constantly just have society reinforcing their like positive association of the same thing.
Yeah.
Like, and you know, obviously you
think he'd be like, I hate Santa.
Well, it's one thing to like assess that as an adult, but if you're carrying that with you from childhood, like you're going to it's going to like graft itself onto you in a weird way. And you're going to be like, why don't other people understand why this is bad? Or like, and you would feel a bit sort of like your trauma was being betrayed or something.
And as you said that his view of Santa after that wouldn't be like, that was a bad Santa, we need a better Santa, but actually just becomes generally being obsessed.
Yeah, like why does he want to be Santa then?
Yeah, that's for cooked. Sure. And just to quickly bring it back to the scene you mentioned where the kids sort of rally around him, this conversation mostly makes me think about like, yeah, the thing that most stood out to me as like very intelligent and super constantly interesting about this movie is the idea of like someone that is a child at heart that like has the power to sort of like advocate for kids in the good and bad way.
His big mission.
The bad being kids don't know how the, you know, like you're talking about a child's understanding of what good and bad is, which is his like fatal flaw or whatever. But it is the power of being like kids are disrespected. We lie to them about this whole convention. We tell them what to do and where to stand and where to be and where to go. And it's like this idea of like this guy that's always pushed around and still bullied like he's in high school being like, well, at this time of year, when I wear this suit, not only do I advocate for the kids and I say the ones that are being good and the ones that are being bad, but all the adults, they know that I'm the king shit in the room and that they have to be like, oh my God, Santa's here.
And slash their throats if they've been bad.
And if I'm at the party, they're going to be like, oh my God, it's Santa. Even though they don't know me, even though I haven't told them anything about myself, just the concept of being this myth instead of a real person is enough to make people be like, you belong. Yeah. You're welcome.
Well, some of the people that he kills are, he rocks up at a church and all the parishioners are coming out or whatever. And for some reason, these two yuppies are like, it's jolly old Saint Nick and sort of like bully him or whatever. It's like, who would do that to like a random Santa?
Dude, you
really
just
strange.
Walked out of church like 10 seconds ago.
Go back in and beg for forgiveness. Pray for forgiveness.
Literally.
And he picks up a soldier toy that has like a outstretched knife or bayonet or something and just pushes it into one of their eyes. And so in that, it's like, you know, he's sort of smiting down a naysayer or whatever.
Totally. Yeah. It's being judge, jury, executioner. It's that very religious superiority thing.
Sure. And then tell us about the end, which is very Grease.
Oh, it's so good. And it looks so fun when it happens. Essentially, he's, you know, the angry mob is after him.
Literally with like flaming torches chasing him along.
Pitchforks, flaming torches. Again, there's just something to the idea of someone calling the parents, the adults out on their bullshit and them literally being like, we're going to hunt you with pitchforks, you know? He's a murderer. I know. I just mean the imagery of it is funny because I get the idea of being like, Santa really, in theory, is advocating for the adults.
It just looks bad. You're like, you can't kill Santa. Like, you kind of believe it's Santa too.
That's what I mean. It's like, isn't this what Santa is? I just, it just makes me be like, Christmas is so weird. So he's cornered. He's got nowhere else to run. He's trying to ride his sleigh van out of town, but it gets caught in some snow. He gets out. He sees that he's surrounded from all sides. He's trying to get away and he rides his sleigh off a bridge and the sleigh flies.
It doesn't tumble down.
It flies
horizontally and then soars upwards into the moon.
It's so good.
It's just like Greece will always be together with the car flying.
And you're so happy for him. Yeah. You're like, yay.
It also had the little sad moment of his brother gets to see him before he does death by a sleigh van or whatever. Maybe he doesn't die. I don't know. Maybe he literally flew off. Maybe that literally happened. And the brother opens the door and has been hearing these reports about a murderous Santa all night. And when he sees the main character, Harry, he's just like, I knew it was you. I knew you were the killer Santa I've been hearing about. Like, it had to be you. It's like, wow. Imagine if that was us, Noah. Imagine if I was acting quite kooky.
I would be so much better in that scenario.
And then you heard on you just, I guess not, you don't listen to the radio news, but you saw tweets. I would see a
TikTok about it or some shit.
Guys, be careful. There's a scary Santa lady. And you're like, I really hope that's not Eliza. And then you open the door and I'll just like,
anytime I hear about a crime, I assume it's you before I hear anything else.
So I haven't done any crimes. Let me tell
you. I would be really understanding. You wouldn't do it about Santa though. No. You would do it about like, I don't know.
I'd do it about some Halloween thing.
On like May the
1st. I'm mudang for Christmas for Halloween.
You'd be like Jar Jar Binks on like May the 4th or some shit. I don't know.
Oh God, no, I would not.
That's your kind of weird taco unicorn humor. No, I'm kidding.
Le random narwhal bacon.
Teh. Well, that's the level of comedy we have coming to us in a film that I will be advocating for, not as a so bad it's good film, but as a bad film.
No, come on. It had fun moments.
Yeah.
Let's talk, we'll talk about Silent Night, Deadly Night Part 2.
Okay.
It's pretty much music,
aren't you two forgetting something?
How about channel 27?
Blood pressure of 160 over 80. Heart rate of 88. Normal sinus at this time. Respiratory rate of 18.
Everything is going to be all right. You have only to stay inside. You only have to stay all right. Do not look outside. Do not look outside. Do not need to look outside. Look out, look out, look out, look out, look out.
The Silent Night, Deadly Night franchise. Just cashing in on more evil Santa stuff.
How many of them are there?
How many are there? There's like six of them.
What?
I've seen the first one. I've seen the second one that we're talking about today. And I can also recommend Silent Night, Deadly Night 5, The Toy Maker, which is absolutely crazy. It also weaves in like Pinocchio mythology kind of, and it has Mickey Rooney in it.
Oh my gosh, random.
Yeah.
Because this is a franchise that no one really has much reverence for at all. It's really only famous for this terrible film because the first one is that thing I critiqued at the start of being like, there's elements, like it's not exclusively just a slasher set at Christmas. I just think it's mostly just like, it's not really about the conventions of Christmas, about like a Santa that comes through a chimney and
it does have a kind of interesting, they do tie together like religion and Christmas in an interesting way. You must admit.
Fine. Not necessarily. You go.
All right.
You so, get us through then.
So, Silent Night, Deadly Night Part 2 is a sort of sequel that we have never seen before, where the majority of the movie is 30 minutes of footage from the first film, Silent Night, Deadly Night, which is about a boy who is driving with his parents at Christmas and they pull over and an evil Santa kills his parents and sort of like sexually assaults his mom, and it really fucks him up. He's sent to a orphanage run by nuns who make that whole situation much worse. He's like spanked and
for being weird and bad.
Then as an adult, the nuns hook him up with a job at a toy shop where he has to dress as Santa. And his catchphrase is punish, punish, which he says when he sees people being naughty.
Why would he not just say naughty, naughty? Naughty. Punish. Like punish doesn't...
Punish.
It's not a thing that Santa does.
This Santa does. And so Silent Night, Deadly Night Part 2 is like kind of fascinating in that it retcons that whole movie. It will just show swaths of footage from it. And the protagonist of this sequel, who is that guy's brother.
Who isn't in the first movie.
Who is not in the first movie is like, and did you know I was there too? And they will cut in footage of like a baby, another child in the car while the parents are getting killed. They'll cut in footage of another kid at the orphanage who's like, my brother isn't crazy. Stop being so mean to him, whatever. And
he's just like, I was also there in that film you watched. And I'm like, you were not.
It's really embarrassing.
You weren't there.
And it's a framing device of this guy being in a like prison interrogation room with a psychiatrist telling this life story, recounting the events of the first movie and sort of being like, I also was traumatized. I also felt like killing people dressed as Santa.
So for the first hour of this movie, I actually was like, not even like a jokey way. I was like, I wonder if it's illegal to do this. Like people could sue you for this. They could be like, 2 years ago, I paid money to go and see Silent Night, Deadly Night. And now 2 years later, I've paid money to go see the sequel and I'm an hour in and I've watched a recut SparkNotes version of the film I watched 2 years ago.
Yeah.
Like literally the only thing for the first hour that's new is this wraparound therapy interrogation
and
sequence.
It is abominable.
It's so fucking bad. You don't really watch It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia,
no.
Do you? Do you know about the therapy episode?
Yeah, where they all go to therapy. And
so there's an episode of It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia.
That sounded like I definitely haven't seen it. I'm like, oh yeah, they
all go to therapy on the show you just said. But the Danny DeVito character, Frank, in his therapy session, the joke is that he's like to the therapist, he's like, this skull is Fort Knox. Like, you're not getting a peep out of me. Like, I don't talk to shrinks. And then he just like easily starts talking about his life. And he's like, ah, oh, you opened me up. You unzipped me. You unzipped me. That is his whole interrogation.
Yeah.
Which is this guy being like.
The first thing he says is, the guy's like, hello, Ricky. And he says, fuck off.
He's like, I'm not going to talk. And then 3 seconds later, he's like, here's every single thing I've ever done.
Stuff
what
I
thought
wasn't
about
present
it.
For. Why would I know how this particular murder, when my brother awesomely decapitated someone as they were tobogganing down a hill towards him and their headless body continued sliding down the snow, how would he know the intricate details of that murder?
It's so funny.
Yeah.
And just the thing where, like, whenever it cuts back to those sequences, which are hilarious, they are funny.
Yeah.
These therapy interrogation sequence things where two funny things happen. One of them is he loves to say things in a, like, snarky, sarcastic thing that we're supposed to be like, whoa, he's such a sociopath. He's describing
he's
such dark
joker.
Things, but he's being jokey, but they're always like so lame.
He's just so unpleasant.
Seems like he's trying to be edgy. And the other thing is the interrogator, his job in life is to interrogate criminals. And this criminal's just telling him like, oh, I've killed people and like I'm really mentally ill. And every time it cuts to him, he's like sweating and he's like, oh, he's like trying to remain, like maintain
his
composure.
It's like,
and you're like, why is this so shocking to you? He's
maybe
like, no one told me this guy killed people. You're like, that's your job.
Tell me what you think of the lead guy's performance, Eric Freeman as Ricky.
It's what you
who is
go to school for. It's what you pay the ticket for. Right? That's what this film is
Eric
that guy's
Freeman.
Ridiculous performance.
I think it might be the worst acting I've ever seen.
It's.
Can you think of a worse performance?
Yeah.
Where
like
it's
I really
the lead
can't.
Character and he's trying. It's also like, it's really meaty for an actor. Actors love to play
crazy
people.
I was going to say, it's someone playing crazy.
Yeah.
Which is bad.
And nothing, no like hand gesture he makes, no line reading, no expression is ever convincing. All of it just rings so completely false. And whenever he's talking, his face is twitching and his eyebrows are like jolting around so anxiously. it's like really incredible to watch.
He's the least imposing. It's like, yeah, it's fascinating to watch. He's the least imposing figure
just you've ever seen on the screen. Just completely
useless. So when he has, I'm doing air quotes, like lost his mind, his tick to make you be like, this man is fucking insane, watch out, is that he will do something evil and then go, ha, ha, ha.
Yeah.
Ha, ha, ha.
Like, he'll laugh really intermittently. It's like me just remembering funny memes.
Like his
day.
Face will be completely flat. He'll be walking and then he'll go, ha, ha, ha. It's really amazing. Yeah, look, I know I was hard. I would say it's really, really, really bad. Like absolutely terrible. Probably one of the worst movies I've ever seen in my life. And we've watched so many bad films. I will say I watched Silent Night, Deadly Night for the first time like 2 years ago. And that's, I think that's a kind of boring film. Yeah. And I'm like, if you watch part two, you get a super cut of the best stuff from that movie and all the other stuff is really dumb and fascinating. Like every creative decision is ridiculous.
The sort of reframing of it is really fascinating because the director is pretty much just an editor. Like all of his other credits are for editing things. So it seems like they were just like, you don't need to worry about coming up with a new angle for this. Just say, oh, the main character had a brother and he's going to do the same thing again. And
it's so
the
funny.
Kind of middle bit where they're trying to bridge like him being like, yeah, all that crazy shit happened to my brother and then he died and I also went nuts or whatever and became an evil Santa. The like middle bit of like when he's not quite at evil Santa yet is so wild where he's like, I had this girlfriend. She was the only thing I ever cared about and she was my first time, but I wasn't hers. Wow, she was freaking ran through. Oh, my goodness.
I had literally
she was naughty.
Just said to you, I was like, oh, he like advocates for all the women. He doesn't kill the women. And then 3 seconds later, he was like, I didn't realize she was used goods.
Yeah,
and
you're like, oh, fuck. No.
It is a film that has three separate sexual assaults.
Yeah, where there'll be a couple canoodling and the girl is like, all right, that's enough. I don't want to have sex. And the guy will start like raping her. And then the evil Santa will come in and kill the guy. And you're like, yeah, get
that's
him.
Right.
And then he'll kill the girl. And
he kills
like,
the girl too.
Okay. I mean, at least Ricky, he's horrible. We don't like Ricky Eric Freeman, but he does spare one such woman one time.
It's like,
and
thank
she says,
you.
Thank you. After he's killed her. Incredibly pushy, oppressive boyfriend. She's like, thanks.
It's just wild. It does it three times.
Yeah.
And yeah, as you said, for a film that's like you've made a really terrible film. One of the things you've tried to do is comment on this parallel with the moral superiority and binary
naughty,
ethics
nice.
Of both Christmas and like organized religion of like, yeah, like the nunnery and the orphanage and stuff. To have that be the thing you attempt and then have these scenes where this killer is being judge, jury, executioner and killing the naughty men and then always killing women as well.
Yeah.
Like we always talk in slashers about that tricky line between are you advocating?
Yeah.
Like are you like, advocating for the killers? Are you advocating for the killer? Like who do you want to win? Do you want them to survive or do you want them to die? And, you know, the nature that slashers are full of, you know, topless women and just like sex as sin and shit. But it's just like one of the more egregious cases of that because it's a film that talks about
good morality.
And evil so
There's
much.
There's also like the movie's most iconic bit happens when he's in the middle of an indiscriminate killing spree. Like after he explodes the head of his slut girlfriend's ex-boyfriend, like he hooks the guy's tongue up to like cables and electrocutes
like
his
cables.
Head off. Then he has a gun and he's just wandering down the street shooting neighbors. So it's like, okay, so you don't care whether they're naughty or nice.
What's
like,
the, what is the iconic moment from this film,
and
Eliza?
I wonder if you have seen this, Anthony. It's a great clip. One of the people that he kills makes the evil, makes the terrible, sinful decision to take out their bin. And as they plonk the can down on the curb, Eric Freeman says, garbage day, and bobbles his head around crazily and then pulls out a gat and blows the guy away and then goes back to his crazy intermittent laughing
and goes ha ha ha.
It's, and the line reading of Garbage Day. Have you seen it?
I have not
seen it. Garbage Day.
I will now.
It's really
it's
good.
So good.
So it's not really a Christmas movie. It's more a Garbage Day type movie. That's the holiday.
Well,
it's
for ages, the, all of the stuff that was shot for this film, yeah, like I would say 90% of it has nothing to do with Christmas.
Yeah.
It's
Does
so weird.
This film have a different or the same director from
different.
The first?
Different director.
Different director.
It's okay. So... It really feels like what AI would write a script as at times. Like
it's so like scene, lazy and simple that it just has me like
it is
knee jerk reaching for like grander explanations for yeah, like why this is happening. Like I'm yeah, getting like imaginary friend, imaginary twin, like elaborate hallucination yeah, vibes. Like is it all mm, actually happening in the mind of the original brother? Like
that would make much more sense than what happens here.
But it's yeah, it's so whole, straightforward.
The fact that like you're watching chopped up bits from another movie initially
that looks way better
makes you be like, but that had the structure of a film. The yeah, first 40 minutes of this film is a rushed film, and then another film starts. Like imagine if the plot structure
like a
of
shorter
a film
one as well,
was Act One. Act 1A, Act 1B, Act 1C, Act 2, and then it ends. Like, it's so
there's
weird.
There's no, like, yeah, in the Silent Night, Deadly Night, the killer's, like, logic. Like, we've given it some credit for the nuns and Santa being, like, this evil team of, like, traumatizing kids or whatever. But, like... It had a thuddingly simple logic that the killer followed where he would say punish and he would go around and kill people that he deemed bad.
Yeah.
And in this one, the guy is saying punish for a bit. Then he says naughty this and acts as someone. And then at one point when he gets to, he revisits one of the old nuns, he just says boo.
Boo.
Yeah.
And
he yells boo at her. It's like, what about punish? What about naughty?
And
like, what are you doing?
And that as the in the interview wraparound stuff,
mm,
clearly his version of psychosis or being a killer or whatever is about being like super smarmy and outspoken yeah, and like weirdly like seductive or
he's
charismatic
trying to be like a
or whatever.
James Dean, like, wow, I guess I'm real fucked up, huh? Whatever.
Which is like that's the opposite of what the whole thing is, which is you being like stunted, silent,
and like, yeah,
like hypnotized in trauma, you know?
Yeah, so he just seems like a dickhead.
It really is a script that just feels like, and then this could happen, and then this could happen. Like, if you put a piece of paper in front of a child, like, not even in a joke way, I'm like, don't you think that the idea of a guy. Just a thing happening to a guy and then that for some reason being the catalyst more than the 40 other times it's happened in his life to just be like, okay, now I'm just going to walk around and shoot people with the gun is such a like ridiculous idea for a scene to put in a film. Like it's not really, it doesn't feel like, oh my God, someone's lost their mind and it's just like massacring people. It just feels like a scene in a horror film where it's like, and then he... starts shooting people. You're like the poster of this film is like a Christmas bauble on a tree.
Yeah.
And inside it is a gun.
Him holding a massive gun.
Like it's the least thematic thing. You know what I mean? Like what is,
yeah,
who puts a gun in a horror film for a main killer to just walk around and be like, bang, bang. It's
I see
so
what you
dumb.
Mean about like the affect of his character being so like, manipulative in the way that he sort of like leverages this position that he's occupying. Like it's yeah, not, it's not like someone who is sort of acting out of necessity because of their trauma. It's like someone who's like calculatedly like, I've had this trauma, I am going to weaponize this against others. Like I'm going to consciously
yeah,
like cold-bloodedly traumatize other people
yeah,
because I feel like I've earned it or something.
You really
it's
have
not
no
like
reason
a,
to follow.
He's not acting out of like reflex or something.
Well, if we were in the room and had 30 seconds with the writers, you know what? Eliza.
And one of the people we're
interviewing. If you were in the room
week,
and you had 30 seconds with the writers,
my
you're going to go
God,
back in time, you just appear in the room, you have 30 seconds. What do you say? Go.
I guess I'd be like, this, don't make this. Go touch some grass, live your life, kiss your children. But like, it just has to relate to the first movie in any way, or like at least try and be as good as it. Like, he has to be like, oh, my brother, like I have sibling rivalry where he's like, I wanted to outdo my brother and like be a better Santa or something.
Yeah. I'm going to go off what Anthony said and say that with my time,
yeah,
I would say, what, well, okay, before I went in the room, I would say to myself, you know, this is a fundamentally flawed project. It's always going to be bad.
Except that.
Give them one thing to deal with and let them run with that. I'd be like, give you'll give the therapy, like interrogation stuff, some weight and create some sort of arc to his madness or whatever. If the reason that the psychologist is getting all sweaty and scared is that he's being like, I thought you were trapped in your psychosis, but actually,
you're a narcissist. Totally,
you're the opposite of your brother. And then it's this thing of him being like, I'm worse than him.
Yeah, that'd
that
be all right.
Baseline would make it make more sense as to why you're like, dude, you're just a nerd. You're just like a freaking loser.
I have two shining lights to bring up for this film.
I like really genuinely don't know what they're going to be.
No, you commented on them as well. The first, a crazy fucking stunt.
Oh my God,
someone could have really gotten hurt during.
It's one of those things you watch like, that was not the plan. It looks incredible and also was not that necessary.
No, it's like he shoots at a car while this in is the that suburbs. Massive scene. Yeah, after garbage day. And the car flips and it's like on two wheels traveling on its side for a while. And there's an actor like right there as the car is speeding on its side past them and crashing.
It's amazing.
Like they couldn't have, maybe that was like a dummy, but no, it's that was so a guy. Real.
Well, it's clear that the reason it's a stunt person is because like, I think the thing is it's supposed to be that the stunt person is going to like, you know, they are standing in the path of the car.
Mm.
Once it is tilted on its side, that's when they go, whoa, and like jump out of the way so that it looks like a near miss.
Mm.
But it was over-rotate, like it was rotating too early. So they jumped out of the way, but then they also sort of have to move their head and they just missed the like bonnet of the car hitting their head. And like if you watch it, you literally go, oh, like it's so, you can see the space between their head and this car. It's fucked.
So like that's something real. That's a little substance in this completely insubstantial,
the scene of the movie is
movie.
Garbage day. Into the car crash.
And then the actual best bit of footage in the whole movie is that the characters go to the cinema and watch Christmas Evil. So we got to see a little bit of Christmas Evil that we just talked about.
Thank God.
And Ricky is like, I love this movie. It's about an evil guy who dresses up like Santa Claus and kills people on Christmas Eve. It's like,
so good.
Wow, yeah, I wish I would just watch that twice.
Is that when the umbrella death happens? Because I want to talk about that quickly.
Oh, the umbrella. Yeah, he runs into like an evil mobster.
Yeah, he has an interaction with an evil mobster and he kills him, but he holds him up. And he finds an umbrella. He stabs him with the umbrella and then he opens the umbrella.
And so it's all bloody. And then it starts to rain.
Really? And that thing where literally...
It's sudden and it's like 7 drops of rain from one bucket.
You're like, yeah, it's like one bucket clearly pouring the rain. It happens instantly. And then it's the slowest zoom into the umbrella covered with blood as though it's like a director being like, oh, this is important because... we're doing it for ages. Like he thinks it matters because
wants to really show it off.
He's, you know what I mean? Yeah. Just the annoyance of being like, it's so annoying that this to me is you saying, isn't this deep? And I'm like, what could this possibly mean?
This
it means
has
nothing
to do with anything. This death is not discovered. It's not connected to
it's
anything.
It's like this rain on the umbrella and the blood.
Oh,
and you're like,
whatever.
Of him killing random mobsters, a man who has no purpose for being other than being annoying and a dick.
True fans on Reddit are going to like, I'm actually you about like-
That was the most important scene in the movie.
The number of drops of blood equates to the number of stab wounds to the parents in the very first movie. Yeah. And it's actually like a-
He needs the umbrella to shield himself from the trauma that's been ingrained in his psyche.
Count the drops.
There are no, that would never happen, Anthony. There are no Silent Night, Deadly Night 2 defenders out there.
Okay.
I think it's the classic case of the defenders are people who say this is essential because it's fascinating. The conversation we've now had a million times on this show, where do you fall in regards to that question of like, I guess even just like, do you recommend
because it's a bit of an interesting artifact.
Because it's bizarre.
I think it's fun to watch. There's a lot to laugh at and comment on. Like the script is so, it's so full of fucking clunkers. Like a bit where he's like, then my foster dad died and you might guess that hit me pretty hard. And he delivers it like Tim Robinson or something. Or a bit where he's like, I don't know what made me do that. Actually, I do know.
Yeah.
Like, what the fuck? You're just filling out. Like, it's just padding out the script. It's crazy.
It's just so funny that he's supposed to be cool and he's like narrating his entire life to a cop. Like, you suck, man.
Yeah. I would recommend it to people. If you like bad movies, it will entertain you.
Yeah, that's true. It'd be good with a group.
Yeah.
That's mine, really. It's like, it is fun to comment on. I do think large stretches of it are so, so, so boring. But that performance, fascinating.
Yeah.
Really.
He's really amazing.
Yeah. I guess I'd recommend both of these for different purposes.
Yeah.
But as I said, I think Christmas Eve, like biggest disparity in quality between films I've ever done, I think. Christmas Evil is an essential watch.
Yeah. It's beautiful. So great. It's shot in such an incredible way. There's one particular set they have. Like, I don't think it's a constructed indoor set. Like, it's just a suburban street. But it has like hundreds of these identical light up reindeer ornaments in a row, and it just looks like the glowy effect of it. It looks like sci-fi or something. Like, it's so transporting to look at.
Totally.
And I would also say, like, for these both being Christmas movies, Christmas Evil has the wintry vibe and the coziness and the festive like energy so much, where it's snowing throughout the whole movie pretty much. And Silent Night, Deadly Night 2 looks like it could have been filmed in like March in the US or something. Like, it never looks nice and cold and snowy. I mean, the scenes from Silent Night, Deadly Night, the original do.
Yeah.
I persist. Garbage day could be any Tuesday like, night in like autumn.
To me, the very first thing I learned about Silent Night, Deadly Night part 2 was garbage day and that whole sequence just being so the picture of like, this is something with so little care in it that I find its funniest element being like, who would write that a sequence in a horror film is just a guy with a gun
walking down the street?
It's like a baby's version of what a killer is. I just find it hilarious. It's not very festive, but I guess I would recommend it over part one, which is weird.
Because you get to see all the kills from part one as well.
Yeah, you see all the best bits and it's just a stretched out slasher.
It's like a clip show.
So I guess there's that for you. Well, that is part one of three of our season screamings Midnight Marathon. Ah! Are you feeling festive?
Yes, I'm really in the Christmas spirit.
Me too. Excited. I also feel like we usually start our Christmas viewing late and this year we're like on it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I also have to say, like, these movies always have the same like Christmas songs, Christmas hymns or whatever. Yeah. And I love it. I love singing along while I'm watching a movie.
Your favorite one.
If any of them have Good King Wenceslas in them, I'm going to flip out.
I was going to say your favorite Christmas song, it's never in them.
Cut some shapes. I'm going to lose my mind.
Well, we'll go out to Good King Wenceslas at the end of this episode, okay?
Really?
Yeah, I think so. Well, and you also can get through like 12 verses of it.
I actually had a dream recently where they were like, does anyone know all the words to Good King Wenceslas? And I was like,
it's like your Avril Lavigne moment of Avril being like, does anyone like have
power fantasy
a dream. Bunch of Beanie Babies for me? What a strong start. We've got more Christmas content for you next week as well over on the Patreon. You can follow us over there for just $5 a month.
Nothing
at all. You'll be buying.
As a Christmas gift for yourself.
I was going to say, exactly. Or I would you, I don't think I'd enjoy if someone got me a subscription to a podcast I haven't heard before. But you can test those waters.
That would be really pushy.
Exactly. Yeah, we're not going to ask you to do that. But yeah, you can support us over there and vote on the next slot bucket we've got up over there. I actually think there's been a change in the polls.
Oh, God.
So it's a real battle.
We need your opinion. Please go and vote over
It's
there.
A tense head-to-head. We still have the first option that's been there for months and months at this point. It's still, I don't think it's going to win this time. But it's neck and neck between our other two options. So make your voice heard. Follow us on Instagram, Facebook, Letterboxd.
I also want to say, if you're listening on Apple Podcasts, if you liked this, can you please give us a star rating?
Yeah.
Maybe a little five stars would be lovely.
And Spotify has that as well now. Oh, we'd love it. We'd love you to bump us.
that like promotes it to new listeners and stuff. Like it will show up in their recommends and shit like that. So absolutely. That'd be cool.
In general, it's been so nice having a fun new show that I'm really proud of. Just gonna say that. Yeah, I think it's so fun.
Yeah.
I think it's been, as in just like, I think we've been throwing ourselves at it and it's been going well.
Yay.
So like I am a person who uses Apple Music for listening to music, but I had to open up Spotify today to do some like administrative stuff to do with myself releasing music actually.
Nice.
But I opened Spotify on like an account that is not, you know, an active account. Like there's no listening history and stuff. And so like, the front page is just like populated with random shit.
Mm. Oh.
And I think almost the only thing that I've ever listened to on that account is little snippets of our show just to like see what it sounds like. Sick. And when I was like comparing it to other shows and stuff. But I've listened to even that so little that the front page is just random shit. And the point of me saying all of this is that Spotify recommended me personally. My personalized feed began with Sun Tzu's The Art of War as an audiobook. And I would like to get to the point where our podcast is something that is recommended to random people when they have no listening history instead of The Art of War. Because
you
I
want
think
it to be as historically significant as The Art of War.
That feels absolutely. Sun Tzu. Very,
and I think that's
reasonable.
An achievable goal.
I think it's reasonable. I actually think it's implied. I sort of was waiting for someone else to mention that that's the kind of legacy we were trying to attain.
I'm sure there's so many like CEOs that have picked up like boardroom battle strategy from listening to us.
Oh, they're all talking about what we're doing over here for sure. Yeah it's making waves. But yeah, even just all, it's crazy. Even the few followers we've made on our Patreon so far, that's so nice. All these people want to listen to the stuff we do. We really appreciate it. Next week we have a cursed ep for the patrons. Yeah. My favorite kind to do. I'm feeling a little delirious, which I think will make it extra saucy.
Amazing. I can't wait for that.
Yahoo! Good King Wenceslasness slipped out on the feast of Stephen.
When it's slowly round and round. Deep and crisp and even.
Turn it up.
Brightly shone the moon that night, though the frost was cruel. When a poor man came in sight. Gathering wind of fuel.
Wait, so they say cruel, so they can cruel, say fuel.
I don't know. I did it in like choir in school, so that's how they had us say it, I guess.
Oh my God, don't you grow up and remember some of the ways that your choir used to be directed? I guess it was a bunch of children, you need to just get them in line. But like the way we used to do breaths and things, I'm like insane.
You know what I always remember is in our school choir, we did My Immortal by Evanescence.
That's
and I
awesome.
Remember hearing like the altos really out of tune starting the song by going, I'm so tired of being here. It's great.
That's awesome. I remember telling you about this at the time, but in my junior school choir, we did a lot. Okay, so there's two then. Firstly, we did a Lion King medley. And one of the parts of it is a song that's only in the musical called Chow Down. And it's the hyenas. And they go, this is how it goes in the show. It goes, Chow Down, Chow Down.
It's transition from one song into Chow Down.
Yeah.
Was just one guy yelling, bellowing at from the top of his lungs, it's time to chow down. Yeah. And then all these little kids going, chow down.
But we would also go, we'd go, it's time to chow down. Like it's like the start of a cheerleading like number, you know?
Yeah,
like,
prepare for total domination.
And then it would get to that bit, we'd go, chow down. We'd almost go, chow down. And our choir director was like, you have to do it in time. And it was like that thing where it was funny to the point that everyone was like, we're never going to do that. It has to be this now. We also once did a collaboration between the symphony orchestra and the choir, a song called Chicken in the Kitchen.
Yeah, that rocked.
And it went like this. Chicken in the kitchen, what's it doing? Flipping, flapping everywhere. Chicken in the kitchen, how to get there? I would like to know. Chicken in the kitchen, pecking at my pastry race. Chicken in the kitchen, where's the hatchet? Catch it if you can.
A chicken
pecking at my everywhere. A chicken, I would like to know. You knew the exact same bits of that.
I also don't know one of the lyrics.
Yeah, but we didn't know the same lyrics. There were bits. We both knew "Pecking at My" because "Pecking at My Pastry Face" is so funny. And then the orchestra had to play. Yeah, with
pizzicato.
A bit of pizzicato, pecking at the pastry base. And I remember just feeling like such hot shit because I was like, guys, this number's actually really hard for me because I'm in both the symphony orchestra and the choir. Which one am I going to do?
And I was like, flapping everywhere.
I was like, yeah, sorry, guys, I have to leave orchestra rehearsal early. I've got to go to the choir now. And I was like, oh, God, what a big day to be singing Chicken in the Kitchen.
I'm the only thing keeping this family together.
Truly. From this little chicken that's assaulting our kitchen.
Wow. That all had nothing to do with Christmas Ellie's movies. I'm so sorry.
It was full of cheer, though, chickeny wasn't it?
Chickeny cheer.
Chickeny cheer.
Bye.
Bye.